Hi, I'm Kristen.
And I'm her little brother, William.
We're from the podcast Guide to the Unknown, where we only talk about scary stuff and have a good time doing it.
Come join the scary fun, everyone.
Wherever you get your podcasts, you'll find Guide to the Unknown.
Warning. This podcast involves discussions of a spooky and graphic nature, not suitable for children or the faint of heart. Strong language and mature content is present. Listener discretion is advised. You have been warned.
Spooksters, and welcome back to another episode of Stabby Snippets here on Three Spooked Girls. I am one of your co-hosts, Jessica, and as always, I am joined by my favorite person on the planet, Tara.
Hey, Spooksters.
Today, we're going to be doing something a little bit different, and I'm really excited about the opportunity we were given, and I'm also very excited, I think we are very excited to be able to share this with you guys. As you know, Tara and I have like this love affair with a certain news network. If you don't know, it's HLN. And one of the things that we love is their shows, their contents. We talked about how Tara and I went to New York for the world premiere of Forensic Files 2 and what a great experience that was. And we received a sneak peek of an upcoming news series I'm super excited to watch.
I'm so pumped. It was really good.
So the new series is called Sex and Murder. You could probably kind of guess what that is. But here's a little synopsis of what it is. In the new HLN original series, Sex and Murder, detectives uncover dirty secrets, scandalous sex affairs, online sex addictions, dangerous jealousy, and stunning twisted fantasies, which have all led to murder. Tara's really hard trying not to like die of laughter. Okay. So I will say I watched this episode and oh my God, I am excited. We're going to tell you about the case, but you should definitely check it out. It premieres Monday, March 16th at 9 p.m., whatever time zone you live in. It's just very easy to remember. I am excited about it. I am here for this. My husband was walking back and forth during this, and he's like, why do they keep saying sex? I'm like, because it's in the show title.
Yeah. I have to say, I love the intro. It kind of reminds me of like American Horror Story, how they do their intros.
Yes.
It reminds me of that. I actually really, really love it.
I do too. I think just to talk about the show before we get into the case that the show talked about, it was just one. Come on, let's face it. What has HLN ever put out that isn't like freaking true crime, like gold? It's amazing. It's edited really well. One of the things I love about this is they make the cases seem so like you get wrapped up in the story and you get wrapped up like, oh,
in the narrative.
Oh, my God, the narrative.
Yeah, the narrative they do is just very captivating. And then they also intertwine the real life stuff. You know, it's not just reenactments or anything like that. There's 911 calls. There's news broadcasts and stuff like that. I always like when shows interweave that kind of stuff because then you get an actual feel of what was happening.
Right.
So, yeah, I really liked that.
Yeah. And it's so great, especially this first case, which the episode is titled Date with the Devil. And oh my God, did this lady have a date with the devil?
I just want to say I'm so happy I am not single. And all you single people, please be careful. And if you're rolling your eyes right now hearing me say this, you're going to find out why.
Yes. Online dating tips from Jessica, who's never online dated, but just has some sort of like internet common sense.
I mean, I did. It was a thing when I dated, so.
But no, let's be real. Like, even though I lived like in California and you lived in another state, you would still text me when you were about to leave. You would tell me who you were going with. That was going to be my tip, is that you need to like let people know, like have a designated person, like your best friend, your mom, your sister, your somebody.
Yeah.
And just text them and say, hey, like I'm leaving for my date. I've met my date at the restaurant. I'm leaving. I got home. Create yourself a timeline and you're going to see why.
Yeah. And what's nice is like, I don't think this was a thing when I was dating. It may have been. I don't remember. But like now you can share your location and stuff and leave it turned on. So, you know, people can know where you're at.
It's kind of because of cases like this one where you kind of have to think about protecting yourself all of the time because, I mean, I know that's like that famous meme that's out there. And it's like when you were kids, you were told not to talk to strangers. And you get old enough to get on the internet, they tell you not to talk to strangers on the internet. And it's like, or like you're, you know, you don't get in cars with strangers. And now it's like literally the internet brings you a stranger in a car and you get in the car and go with them.
Mm-hmm.
That's why like anytime that I travel, like when I would travel for work, anytime I would travel, I would always share my Uber because you in Uber, you can share your ride like information. I'd always share it with my husband.
Yeah.
And I'd always screenshot and then send that to my husband as well.
Right. Smart.
Mm-hmm. So basically, we're just being moms or older sisters right now and saying like, be safe.
Mm-hmm.
And obviously not everyone is like this.
Yeah, no.
Okay, so we're going to dive into the story. When the show started and they like kind of flashed the first like 2 or 3 minutes and they were talking about who it was, I instantly knew this story because living on the West Coast, this was a big thing. This took place in April of 2016. The show opens up and it talks about a woman who, you know, was kind of like she was a nurse. She was a single mom of three. She was, you know, getting back into the dating after being divorced for a couple of years. And so she does what a lot of people do now. And it's actually more common to meet your significant other on a dating app now than it is to like meet them how my husband and I met the old fashioned way in a bar, you know?
Yeah.
So she goes on a dating app. She meets this guy and she decides that she's going to go out with him. And this woman's name is Ingrid Line. Like I said, she's a single mom. She's got three daughters. She's very active in their lives. She's a big sports fan. She lives in Seattle. So she either goes to like Mariner games or like Seahawk games. So she's very active in her kids' life and kind of her community, like with her friends and stuff like that. So she's a very active person. So on April 8th of 2016, Ingrid goes on a date. And she goes on a date with this guy that she met online. And they've been kind of seeing each other for about a month. And they go to a Mariners game.
It was opening season. It was a big game. Mm-hmm.
Yeah. So they go to the game. And then I guess this guy's sister or somebody worked at a bar. And they go there. And then they take the bus and go home to Ingrid's house. Nothing on the surveillance tapes that you see. Do you see anything that looks wrong? Do you see that she's in distress? Anything like that? So the next morning, Ingrid's ex-husband, Phil, goes to bring the three daughters over. And he's like, you know, knocking on the door, like calling. She's not answering. He's getting concerned. And he immediately checks the car is gone. And he's like, this is not normal. Ingrid is punctual. She is always here for her kids. She's always communicating. What should I do?
Mm-hmm.
So he calls Ingrid's mom. Ingrid's mom has no clue where she is, but she comes over and Ingrid's mom goes inside and she notices that her phone, purse, wallet are all there.
Yeah.
And really think about it. Like, when was the last time you just walked out of your house without your wallet or your phone?
Right. That's things you always take everywhere. And I think the biggest thing, too, was that her ID, too, was in her wallet.
Right.
What would she be doing with absolutely nothing?
With just her keys.
Yeah.
I mean, it's not like she could go purchase anything unless she just had like a wad of cash and left. But most responsible people, which it sounds like Ingrid would carry their wallet because they'd have their driver's license in it. So if they got pulled over, they'd be able to be like, here's my ID. At first, and okay, this did irk me. At first, the police officers was telling like Ingrid's mom and friends that Ingrid, you know, she's newly divorced and hit the dating scene. She probably just like took off for a bit because that's what women do when they get divorced.
Washington police, why? Why do you keep doing this? You did this in the Ted Bundy era too. Why?
Apparently, that's what they're taught. It's in their manual. Women disappear frequently. Like, people who don't disappear frequently, who are very responsible, all of a sudden, out of the blue, just like up and vanish. It's in the Seattle area, too. I'm like, I don't get it.
I bet that guy got some flack.
Right.
Being like, what the hell were you thinking?
Right. So everyone's thinking, like, what can we do to find Ingrid? We got to find Ingrid. Like, is she hurt? Is she, like, in distress somewhere? Did she go crazy and just drive off? And her mom is like, oh, my God, we're on a family plan.
Mm-hmm.
Let me pull up her account. And so they go in and they pull up her account and they see that she's been in communication with this one specific number. And Ingrid's sisters, being the intelligent people, plug it into Facebook, which is so smart. And it comes up with this guy by the name of John Carlton.
Mm-hmm.
So they're looking, you know, and so they're like looking to find this guy. Now, the next part, like this next person that they introduce, it broke my heart when he did his interview.
Yeah.
His name is Mike Navasio. And he goes out that morning. It's the 8th or 9th. I'm not quite sure at this point. But he goes out to his to put something in his recycling bin. And he opens his recycling bin. And he noticed that there's like these three bags in there that aren't his.
Mm-hmm.
And they're definitely not recyclable products. He's like, oh my God, what do I do? So he like picks the first bag up. And it's like white bags. And I think there might be like wrapped multiple times in the bags.
Mm-hmm.
And he kind of thinks he sees what he assumes is a face, but he's not 100% sure. So he takes that bag out and then he picks up another bag and then he picks up the final bag because he said the first one was very heavy, but like the other two weren't. And he picked up the last one and he like held it up and like it didn't, I don't think it had as much. I don't think it had as many bags, but he could like see where it was like a leg and it went down into a foot. And the thing that he said and like freaked him out the most is that he could see the toenail polish like on the edge of the bag. And okay, I want to say this, like my heart goes out to this gentleman because like he's just minding his own business. He's like 10 blocks away or some, he's very close. And he's just like, oh my God. And he finds it and he just like breaks down on camera for a little bit. You see him, he gets like emotional and I'm like, oh my God.
Yeah, I can't even imagine. Like, that's terrible.
Mm-hmm. So like, I'm just like, oh, poor guy.
Right.
And so in his recycle bin, they found a head, an arm, and a leg. They call them fresh body parts. And I know that sounds really gross and cringy, but it was like there had been no decomposition. So it was like they had been put in there very recently.
Mm-hmm.
So because of that, they immediately go, is there anyone missing in the area? And of course, Ingrid pops up. And because there was no decomp, they were able to do an ID really quickly that this was actually Ingrid Line.
Yeah.
So the detectives immediately go into who could have done it. I'm sure Mike at one point in time was a suspect or at least checked out.
Right.
Probably for some alibis. But they don't really talk about him. So they're trying to think, like, when you go down the usual suspects, you know, it's the ex-husband, maybe a rejected lover. Maybe this is just like a Manson-style killing where someone's come into the house and like abducted this beautiful woman type situation.
Mm-hmm.
But they did have another lead, which is this guy, John Charlton. You know, they bring him in and they ask him questions like, how did you meet her? He says online. When you look at his dating profile, it says like just looking for friends. You know, he seems like a really, like if you were to look at his dating profile, you would think he was like a really like nice, sensitive guy. Like his profile pic is in like sepia tone. So you're like, ah, he's like a nice guy. So the police bring him in and they start, quote unquote, interviewing him. They're not interrogating him at this point because they know that at this point that they've gone out on a date and that he is possibly the last person to have seen her alive.
Right.
They go, okay, like, John, where do you live? And he like, what's your address? And he goes like, well, I'm homeless. And the police are like, what? And he's not really helpful.
He's weird during this.
Yeah, he's totally weird. So he's like telling him like, yeah, we did it a month. He seemed to be really annoyed with the police. Anytime they would ask him a personal question, he'd be like, is this about me or Ingrid? Which we all know, like, that's really like a huge like deflection.
Yeah.
Like a lot of people do that. And then when they were like, okay, so where were you like this morning or like after you left? He's like, well, I woke up on the streets this morning. So I'm assuming Ingrid just took me downtown. They ask for the timeline. He says, we go to the game, we go to the bar, we go back to her house. We're really drunk. You know, he thinks they have sex. He's not 100%. Like at first he says they have sex. And then when they question him again, he's like, I think we did. But, you know, I was really drunk, so I don't know.
Mm-hmm.
And he just assumes that Ingrid took him and dropped him off downtown in the middle of the night. The more they question him, the more he becomes unhelpful and he decides to ask for an attorney, which every investigator knows is like, ah, fuck, it's like the worst thing that could happen.
Right.
Of course, they leave like the tape running, like, because we've seen that like in the Jodi Arias tapes and stuff like that. They like leave the tape running to see what they do. Like they did it with Chris Watts. What does he do? He takes his jacket, balls it up as a pillow, and then lays on the floor and goes to sleep. So then it cuts to talking about the other suspects, and they basically very quickly eliminate her ex-husband, Phil, as a suspect. He had no motivation. From what I could tell, it seemed like they had a good relationship, like co-parenting. Like the fact that he had the girls while she went out on a date seems kind of like, okay.
Mm-hmm.
I would say he's not, I don't know if he's 100% eliminated. I think they're just like, we're not looking into him too much.
Right.
So then they execute a search warrant on her home and they find some good evidence, which one is like an almost empty box of trash bags that matches the trash bag she was found in. So they're like, okay, if these are, and I get it, they look like regular white, like Costco trash or like, you know, those white trash bags. So I could see where someone would be like, oh, that's just a trash bag. But if she was wrapped up in a lot and there were not a lot in the box, it makes sense.
Right.
Also, when they go into the bathroom and look, the bathroom is clean, but there's like this weird pruning saw. It's like a 15-inch blade pruning saw, like just propped up between the toilet and the bathtub in the bathroom. And I'm like, who just like, what was she like? Oh, I'm going to get up and do some pruning and I need to remind myself. Where's the first place I go? The bathroom? That's not what people do.
Mm-hmm.
One of the things I like about the show is they have like this expert and he kind of talks about some of the evidence they have. And so he has like a cow bone and he's like, he demonstrates like, he's like, this is basically the same saw that they had. And he was like, this was going to take a long time. This wasn't something that happened quickly.
Right.
He is like, this took a long time and you had to be very precise to basically cut how the body was found. They also, in this time, in the drain, like, they found blood and other human remains. So I'm thinking, like, maybe bone fragments, hair, skin tissue.
Right.
So they're like, okay, Ingrid was definitely killed in the home.
Mm-hmm.
And she was cut up in the bathtub. So 6 days later, they were, like, still canvassing the neighborhood. And they found her torso and another guy's bin. And they knew it was hers because it had the same, her belly button was pierced.
Oh, God. Yeah.
It matched. So I was like, oh, like tattoos and piercings can help identify bodies, just so you know.
Mm-hmm. So the people who were hating on it in the Aaron Hernandez docuseries, tattoos can be good.
Right.
They can be helpful.
Right.
It's very dark.
So 9 days later at this like recycling plant, they find more of her body parts because like the bins have been picked up and like been processed. So they're like on a conveyor belt and like it was pretty traumatizing for a lot of the employees.
Mm-hmm.
So they basically have to shut down the plant and like go through everything to try to find more of her remains, which they do find more, but it just so that you know, they don't ever find all her remains.
Yeah.
At this point in time, they're like, okay, we have to figure something out. We got to see, is there any kind of evidence in that house still that could help us? And this is where they basically are like, we're going to have to tear up her plumbing.
Yeah, but it's a good thing because then it kind of helps them because they find blood and flesh down there.
Yeah. So they find like more of her and they're like, okay, like they know. And then they also use this stuff called Blue Stone.
I thought it was Blue Star.
Maybe it's Blue Star. It's probably Blue Star. That makes more sense than Blue Stone. It's blue something, people.
No, it's super cool because it's like they spray it or whatever. And even when it's dark, if there's, you know, blood and stuff, it illuminates. So super high tech.
Mm-hmm. It's a little bit, I think it's a lot better than like the luminol.
Right.
And then it kind of like slightly extracts, it looked like. Like he was on that tile and he was like, look, you can see it. And then he like tilted it up. And then all of a sudden it was like running away. So I don't know if that was just like the chemical solution or if it actually would extract stuff. I don't know.
Yeah, I don't know. Either way, it's really cool though.
Right.
Gave me a Forensic Files feel for a sec.
Oh my gosh, it was. And it was cool because it shows like anything that's down in like the porousness of that tile it was going to show.
Mm-hmm.
At this point, the coroner can look at the body because they have enough of it to kind of see what happens. And they determine that she was like drunk at the time she was killed. She had like a 0.074 blood alcohol level and she had been strangled to death. So during this time, they've also found her SUV. She had a 2015 Toyota Highlander. They find it in like the Midtown area. So they're like, okay. They go start going through it and they find trash bags in the car. They also find 3 fingerprints under like the driver's side door,
mm-hmm.
which happened to be John Charlton's fingerprints.
Mm-hmm.
Another weird thing about John is that like he kind of stayed with sometimes and was still really close friends with his ex-girlfriend.
Right.
And the police start talking to her and they ask her, like, did you talk to him during this time frame? And she knew about Ingrid, but she thought they were like just friends
mm-hmm.
and did not know that they had a romantic relationship. But he was supposed to come over early Saturday and he changed his plans and ended up coming over like later in the weekend.
Mm-hmm.
So that was weird.
Right. Yeah. Because she was like, he just said something came up and that was it.
It's right.
Like, oh. Like in normal, you wouldn't think about that. You'd be like, okay, whatever. But
right.
We know what came up.
She also said that when he showed up, he had like a fat lip. And when she asked him what happened, he said like he had gotten mugged or robbed.
Yeah.
He also had scratches on his face and on his chest, which she didn't know about. But when the police like investigated him, because he had abrasions on his face. And then I don't know how they discovered it was on his chest because they didn't really say. But like then the next thing they're like, and he had them on his chest.
Yeah, they just showed the pictures.
Right. Which these were like indicative of someone fighting back
mm-hmm.
or kinky sex. I don't know. I'm just assuming it's the first one in this particular instance.
Yeah.
And then this is also like John's ex-girlfriend. This is where she's like, I just knew that they were friends. He told me that he didn't go back to her house, that basically he got off the bus downtown.
Mm-hmm.
But there was like security footage that backed up his original story to the police because he told the police the real like timeline of events. But he told his friend something different, which is weird.
I feel like he was probably taking advantage of the situation since he had nowhere to live.
It's true. This is also the time where John starts being linked to evidence in the home. I know they mentioned something about like leather on his shoe sole or something like that.
Mm-hmm.
He's obviously was in the home. He puts himself in the home and he puts himself being the last person to see her alive. And then they start looking into his background and they come to find out that he has a criminal past in like 6 states, which are like robbery, assault, battery, arson.
He's got a laundry list.
Yeah. But this is something to note. He didn't do any of the like he didn't commit like felony crimes. They were all like lower ones.
Mm-hmm.
Also to note that his parents at one point in time filed an order of protection against themselves from him because I guess he was like acting weird towards them and then went and pulled a movie off a shelf and sat it down and was like, you need to be worried.
And it was Hannibal.
Yeah, I was like, I would have been like, get the fuck out.
It was, or not Hannibal, it was Silence of the Lambs. Yeah. Oh my God.
Right? I was like, But then his parents ended up dropping the petition to get it, which I'm like, no, this is my little soapbox for this. If you file a petition for an order of protection, you see that shit through.
Yeah.
There's so many cases where people are like, well, they were getting a restraining order and then they just didn't.
Ugh.
Like they started it and they no, get that. Show up to court. Because even if it's like just 30 days,
just do it.
Follow through.
Yeah.
One of his exes actually went on Dr. Phil.
Oh, my God.
You know, as soon as I saw that, I was like, Dr. Phil, which, by the way, I just found out today, Dr. Phil has a TikTok.
Oh, snap. 2 Jessica's loves in 1 for you.
Tara is the like troll TikTok and send her videos that like describe our friendship.
Literally, that's the only reason I have a TikTok. Someone tried to like follow me and I'm like, I'm never going to post nothing. This is not what this is for.
I know. I have 0 videos. I'm like, I just love content because it's good. I don't know. Anyway, but this ex-girlfriend, and I don't know if it's the same ex-girlfriend or it's a different ex-girlfriend.
I couldn't tell. I think it was more than one. Yeah.
And she was on the Dr. Phil show and she basically was saying how there was one night where they had been drinking and they decided to have sex and he started to choke her and it was a little too hard.
Mm-hmm.
And she kind of like woman explained it away in her head, which is like, oh, I didn't know if it was like me that felt this way or like, you know,
Lady, you can't breathe. You literally say you can't breathe.
Smack, maybe not smack the face, but be like, help.
Safe word.
Right. So the police are also thinking, like, because of this, like, maybe the death was an accident and, like, he strangled her during sex and was drunk and then was like, shit. Pretty sure you should just call 911 at that point. So the girlfriend that, like, was where he is, the girlfriend in Seattle, was saying at one point in time, John tells her, like, he killed somebody when he lived in Florida. And I guess he hit him with a frying pan and then cut them up in a bathroom and then threw their bodies away into some water. And I'm like, hello, he cut the person up in a bathtub. Please connect these dots.
He has a pattern.
Yes. But like one of the weird things or one of the shocking things that I thought was that his friends were like, John's a good guy. Like, I'm very shocked at these allegations. Like one of his friends was like, yeah, he can get a little mean. Like, you know, when he's doing drugs and drinking.
It was interesting. It was either they just didn't want to admit it or he very well could have just acted like a different person around his friends. People do it all the time.
It's very true. Ted Bundy.
Yeah.
Annie Hoodles. Which, I'm sorry, but this must have been terrifying for Seattle because it's like, this happened in 2016 and I know that it was like 40 something years before that or close to that. But like, could you imagine like people in Seattle were like, shit, not again.
Right.
There's a dude killing girls out there. So John is sticking with his alibi. He is too drunk. He doesn't know what happened. He has no idea what's going on. But like the police are like, no, you strangled a woman, took her body into the bathroom, cut her up methodically, and then wrapped her up in trash bags, loaded it in her car, cleaned up said bathroom, and then left her house and dumped her body in various recycling bins around the Seattle area.
Man, you are a productive drunk, I guess, at that point.
I mean, I wish I could be that drunk and get, like, clean my house, like, the way he cleaned the bathroom. I mean, I'm not trying to poke fun, but, like, literally, like, the police were like, there was nothing wrong with this bathroom.
Right.
If that saw hadn't been in there, I'm pretty sure they would have just walked in the bathroom and have been like, it's good.
Mm-hmm.
It's a good, clean bathroom. They wouldn't have had any tip that they should, like, spend more time in there.
Right, exactly.
So this is actually why they're like, there's no way he was as drunk as he said he was.
Mm-hmm.
And then they make the arrest, and then he pleads guilty, which I was like, okay, I'll give the dude some props. Like, he's basically like, yes, I did it. I'm pleading guilty.
Mm-hmm.
Whew. Okay, this is where Jessica got really triggered and was like, what the fuck, Washington?
Mm-hmm.
Okay, state of Washington. You have wonderful apples. You produce fantastic coffee. You are responsible for the grunge scene of the 90s. However, your freaking laws around, like, how someone is put away for murder is absolutely the most ridiculous. So, basically, here's a man who's admitted to strangling a woman. And mind you, they don't go to trial, so you never know the motivation. He is pleading guilty to strangling a woman, taking her body into a bathroom, cutting it up, and then dispersing it throughout the city of Seattle. And dude gets 28 years. He actually gets 27 years and 9 months. And the reason is because the way they look at him is he's not considered a high offender because all his others throughout like Montana and Wyoming and Florida and all these other places, he doesn't have a high enough like count or his criminal point system in which he's occurred isn't high enough to warrant life. So this dude will be out in his 60s.
It's ridiculous.
He's admitted to another person that he's killed another person with a frying pan and done the same thing. And then he destroyed a beautiful life, took a mother away from like three beautiful girls and friends and family and loved ones. But he only gets 27 years. And I'm not even sure if he can, like, do parole before that. So, boo, Washington. If you were in the state of Washington, we love you. And we feel sorry for you because your criminal justice system is so messed up. Like, ah!
I literally yelled at the screen. I was like, are you effing kidding me?
Mm-hmm.
Like, what the hell?
Why?
Why?
And just, yeah. It literally upset me. It broke my heart.
Yeah.
So, with that, If you live in Washington, please write your legislators and have them change that law, because that seems very archaic. And it's like, I don't know, like, and I feel like in California, if they're like, oh, you jaywalked and you killed someone, like, oh, you're a career criminal here. Like, you, two strikes, like, we're a three-strike state. Like, you could literally, like, jaywalk several times and go to prison. I mean, I don't think it's that bad. I'm just saying, because those are, like, little misdemeanors, but, like, you know.
Yeah, it's crazy.
So that was the episode. It's fantastic. Please watch the show. I know we talked about it. I know we talked about the case, but watch it. Let us know what you think of this show.
Yes.
We want to show HLN some love, and because we love them. Mm-hmm. And yeah, just let us know what you think. We are so excited for this new series. I mean, if all of the episodes are like the same caliber as the first one, I am so excited.
Mm-hmm. Right? It's so good.
Well, that's going to wrap us up now. And we will catch you on Monday for a new episode. And then you can actually, on Monday, watch this episode on HLN.
Yeah. Bye, guys.
Bye.
Murder in America is a true crime podcast that covers stories from all 50 states, including stories of mass shootings, serial killers, and lesser-known murders. Do you find yourself doing more research after listening to a true crime show? Well, Courtney and I used to do the same thing, and that's why we created Murder in America. Our podcast dives deep into each case. Our storytelling will make you feel like you're right there within the case with us, watching it all play out, and we do not shy away from the graphic details. If you're a fan of true crime, then listen to Murder in America on Spotify now.